Well, hello and welcome to the Chamber Talks Business Podcast. My name is Sean Rose and I'm the host for this podcast. Today's session, we're joined by Monica Fogarty, the Chief Executive of the Warwickshire County Council. And we're also then going to be talking with the new Chief Executive of the Coventry and Warwickshire Chamber of Commerce, Corin Crane. So Monica, firstly, thank you very much for joining us and for agreeing to be a co-host. Give us a bit of a feel for what it's like leading such a huge organisation that you do. I think it's about 5,000 employees, isn't it?
That's right. We've got about 5,000 staff right across the county geographically. Budget-wise, we're about £750 million and another £200 million capital programme. So we're a large organisation, but for me, it's what I've always wanted in terms of having that organisation that can actually do things for people, real people in the county, because that's what we're here for. We're place shapers, place leaders, and working with the politicians is just fantastic. We're one team that pulls together and then pulls together with Coventry as well. So one Coventry and Warwickshire, we're one economy, we're one health footprint. And you know, to be at the helm of an organisation like Warwickshire County Council, it's the best job in the world. Corin might have a different view on that, but for me, it's fantastic.
Well, how do you go about becoming a chief executive of such a large organisation?
Well, some people get into it by accident. I've spent about 30 years in local government now. So I've done a whole range of roles, front-facing, policy, performance management, transport, highways, infrastructure, economy. I'm an economist by background, but I've done most roles in local government. And I think you get so many opportunities that you work hard, you love what you do, so it doesn't feel like work, mm-hmm. and you find that opportunities open themselves to you. And I'm quite a people person, can't stop talking, as you can probably gather. But you get what you give, and if you give out the importance of relationships, you build those networks, you work with other colleagues, you establish common ground, and that's where it's led me to. So to be able to inhabit a role where you can actually influence and marshal people together to a common goal, particularly in tough times where we're struggling for resources. But people are what it's all about, and without our people we're nothing. So 30 years, I look back now and I think, oh my God, I can't believe it. But I've loved every minute of it, and opportunities have just opened themselves up to me. So lucky on me.
So Corin, let's go back in time. So you joined the Chamber in 2022, but let's go back to your childhood. What sort of led you into the career you're doing now? What were the sort of things you gained from school and the skills you've got that brought you to where you are today?
Do you know, and I imagine a lot of people say this in jobs, don't have absolutely no idea how I ended up here. I think that's probably fair to say. I mean, I went to a fairly, not the best of schools, I suppose. I'm from a one-parent family. Me and my mum grew up together when I was younger, just the two of us in a little council house in Shrewsbury. And at school, I think out of 200 kids in my year, I got 3 O-levels and I came 7th in the year. So this wasn't a school that was necessarily blessed in academic brilliance, but I had never even in work experience. There was no focus on jobs or careers or anything else like that. So I went to college, got a couple more O-levels and A-levels, and managed to get to university. And that was quite a big deal at the time. And I did English and drama. I was into music, I was into books, I was into films. That was for watching all my life, but literally no idea about careers. And I think one of the things I have always been very, very active about, though, is around social justice. Even from a young age, I was engaged in all sorts of causes. And that idea of wanting to make the world a better place, without being trite, was something that followed me all the way through. And by the time I got to a point in my life where I started to focus on a career, I started to have this really set of principles in me that I've stuck by all my life. And I didn't really think about jobs proper. Until I had kids about 15 years ago. So, that's the sort of, I started thinking, I'll best earning some money now.
Well, let's touch on those sort of priorities that have sort of led you and that you've kept kept inside and that's guided you. What are those priorities?
Well, it's not priorities necessarily. I think
principles.
I think all people should live their lives by a set of principles. Most of us do, I think, don't we? I think those of us who are active in the world and who do things know where what they consider to be right and wrong. But this idea of social justice is incredibly, incredibly important. Everything I do, and probably all the people I surround myself all the way through my life, my good friends, you know, girlfriends, you know, good members of the family you actually get on with, you know, they're the ones that you tend to get on with. This idea of what equality of opportunity is a big one. And so certainly, I spent quite a bit of time working the trade union movement up in Yorkshire and Humberside. And when I was working for TUC, a big part of my role there was around looking and supporting workforces to train up people, looking at workforce education, about developing injustices. So that was something that sat with me. There's not many chief execs in the chamber movement that started in the trade union movement, but those principles of all putting your arms around each other to solve a problem are ones that are the same in trade unions and the chamber world.
So let's go back to that time at university. Firstly, which university did you go to and what made you choose English and drama?
Yeah, well, my geography was never very good in the sense that I'm quite into my music and I wanted to go to a university that was close to where the House Martins were based, and they were from Hull. So all the choices of university put down, Leicester being one of them, where I ended up going, Leicester Polytechnic, it became De Montfort University, was the only one that let me in. And it's nowhere near Hull, so I didn't really discover that until I actually got there. But yeah, I was just into English and drama. Music, books, films, those are my big things. That's sort of the backbone of my still to my life. And I was doing drama for the first year, but all the other drama students used to annoy me. I think I probably used to annoy them as well. So I stopped drama for politics halfway through my second year.
For politics? Politics? Yeah, well, that's a big switch.
Yeah. But I was involved in politics in various ways already, sort of in my private life. So it's quite an easy switch. And actually, you know, when you start looking at certainly the sort of politics that I was interested in and the sort of trade union movement I ended up in, the difference between literature and drama and politics, they all go hand in hand. There's very few dramatists who write a book or a play that haven't got a political motive at the back of it, I don't think.
That is completely true. So what skills did you gain from that degree? And more importantly, what did you gain from being political, being active?
Yeah, well, I think having a view on the world is important. I hope I got three amazing, absolutely incredible kids, and I think all of them, you know, one's 16 now, and the two girls are 10. All of them have got a really good social conscience, which is brilliant. You know, they get cross at a telly. You know, you can see them getting angry about things. They don't like to see injustice in the world, and having that in your soul is a great one to do. But I think at university, what I learned more than anything else was how to get by on no money, because I genuinely skint those days there. But in a city like Leicester, and I love the Midlands, you know, I'm a Midlander through my whole body. But when you look at the haves and have-nots in the world, in places like Leicester and Leicestershire, it was a big deal. And you see that people really struggling to get by in their lives, at the same time incredible wealth, and that was hard. And I also saw a lot of people who had such talent who weren't getting jobs. And a lot of my friends, you know, ended up with no qualifications at school. Luckily, they've all done well. But that idea that, you know, privilege can give you more opportunities than hard work sometimes, I've just found really, which has made me very, very cross.
How do we make a society fair in that way?
Yeah, I think as far as a career goes, I think that's probably, if I've got any route through my life to where I am today, it's probably this idea of how you level the playing field for people. So certainly, I started off in the trade union movement. I did all sorts of musical. I used to live in Brighton for an awful long time, and I worked down there in record shops and did some, you know, some very, very, very casual sort of DJ. And I wasn't very much good at it, but I had a good record collection, which was always a good starting point. But you know, when I actually started to end up in proper jobs, I was involved in skills and in regeneration and economic regeneration. And I worked for local authorities around what, you know, and when you start thinking about what regeneration really is, it's back to that first point of how you level the playing field. And you've got Monica on it in a moment. She'll say the very same things. How you look at the macro issues of a geography, and you've got to level the playing field. You've got to make access to services best. You've got to make all the schools good. And that's what drove me through my early career.
So you went from a trade union movement into then local authorities and then LEPs?
Yeah.
So it's sort of that transition of trying to level the playing field, then sort of moving into business. Is that about right?
Yeah, and getting frustrated at certain points. I've never been particularly ambitious, but getting frustrated I didn't have more power to make decisions was always a big driving point. So within local authorities and in local enterprise partnerships, you can soon get lost in bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. Having a good idea and a budget and a business plan is no guarantee of actually getting that idea through. So the bureaucracy of those areas made me really, really frustrated. And I think that's why often I see a new job and think, well, actually, you know what? I moved jobs quite a lot to get promoted quite quickly because I used to think, you know, I could do that job. A little bit yours or Hughes. But actually that sort of drove me rather than the title or a wage. It was more about the decision making. I think if I had more power, I could do more stuff.
So what do you think made you stand out to get those promotions quite quickly?
Yeah, well, I've certainly got the gift of the gab. And I think that's probably true for anyone who knew me. And I think that I'm a rare breed of energy and principles in that, you know, I want to get stuff done. And I if I do anything as a leader, I like to think that I inspire by just, you know, the energy and focus. You know, I'm not a shouter. I'm not an authoritarian. I like people to have their own space. But I want people to also focus on the things they can do, agree a vision. And I think that sometimes having energy and a vision and a bit of dynamism behind it are rare talents in management sometimes.
Do you find that tiring? So having to use the energy you've got to inspire a whole team?
No, I don't. I have to wind it back, if anything. I think that's the reality of it. One of the things I've learned in my career, I was just too manic when I was younger. I was bonkers. So I think I just drove everyone mad by constantly being tiggerish about everything and, you know, probably not finishing tasks properly and just constantly creating chaos. You know, and good music is like, you know, it has a certain element of chaos in it, but you have to have structure as well to make it beautiful. And I think that's probably the same in my career. I do more stepping back than stepping forward at the moment.
Let's touch on the music. So you've mentioned it a few times. Obviously, it plays a real leading role in your life. What do you class as good music then?
I'm an indie lad at heart, so that's my starting block. You know, I'm a guitar band person. But literally, almost from the day, and I'm not unusual. I've said a good group of my friends are exactly as obsessed by the things as I am. But even from the age of about 4 or 5, I was collecting records and record players and listening to stuff. And it was just the whole life being peppered by chasing after records. The internet destroyed all that, unfortunately, record searching. But, you know, I'd probably put the Spotify algorithm as one of my best friends now, though, so that's good. But yeah, I will listen to all sorts. So I'll listen to classical music. And I love a lot of blues. I love a lot of jazz, which is fantastic. Music has that capacity to hear a song you haven't heard for a long time, to close your eyes, and you can open your eyes and be back at that moment in time. It's like time travel, isn't it? And I think that's what good music does. It gives you the capacity of time travel, even to a time before you were born, if it's done properly.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm one of the directors of Ulsters Kelly. We're a firm of solicitors here in Coventry and Warwickshire. We currently have 5 offices across the region, Coventry, Nuneaton, Stratford, Leamington Spa and Southam. And our role is that we provide a full range of legal services to individuals and their families. We've been members of the Chamber of Commerce here in Coventry and Warwickshire for an awful long time now, and we really value and appreciate the support that they're able to provide us, and also the platform where we can meet so many other businesses across the area.
So Corinne, you've came into this new role. You've got huge energy, which we have been speaking about. What's the biggest things for you that you want to tackle in 2023?
Well, I think there's a number of layers, aren't there? You know, from a business perspective, we're going to have as tough a year economically as we've ever had. You know, I think that's the reality of what's going on at the moment. And I think from Chambers' role in this is always interesting, isn't it? You know, you do not want to be the doom-mongers that are constantly talking about how bad it is. Business confidence is so important, you know, for number of levels. So dealing with that next year is important. But this, more than anything else, I think how we step up as a region during these tough times is incredibly important. And if you look at Coventry and Warwickshire, you can look at the beauty of the Warwickshire countryside, you can look at the industry of inner city Coventry. You know, and if all of the high level of the economy is the skin and bones of our body of the region, the blood is the human beings that pump through all that all the time. So the next year, how we with our partners really celebrate the human beings across the area will be the big one. The entrepreneurs, the business leaders, the employees, you know, the people from the communities and the schools. that will be the challenge during any recession, is about how you support people. I don't honestly keep meaning to bring it back to music all the time, but I was struck, you know, I was a big Specials fan in my time, and I'm watching stuff around Terry Hall, who's a big hero of mine as a younger man. You know, you look at that video for Ghost Town now, after all these years, at that time, you know, the end of the boom town in the Midlands, and what Coventry looked like, you know, it was awful. It painted a bleaker picture. But the only optimism in that song is when he actually talks about the human being, the human element, when it sort of gets a bit more upbeat. And that's what we need to do as partners, you know, local authorities, chambers, businesses, communities, is pick out the human story, be more upbeat, talk about the individuals, make sure we focus on the detail of human life rather than the bigger parts of the economy, because you'll go crackers if all we're talking about is recession for 12 months.
And, you know, as place leaders, local authorities, chambers have got a really crucial role in pulling together agencies to tackle problems together. How are you going about, as a new chief exec for the chamber, how are you going about developing those relationships with small businesses, medium businesses, local authorities? How are you approaching that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not. I think as an individual, I'm probably less bothered about the relationships purely from a relationship perspective, and more when you start to work through issues. So, for instance, I think me and you'd spoke a couple of times when I very first started in jobs, sort of thanking you, welcome to your new job, and how's it going. Once you start digging beneath some of the issues me and you have both been talking around poverty at the moment, that's when you really build a good relationship then, isn't it? When you realise you're on the same wavelength as someone. So there's this idea of, wow, what does poverty really mean? Where does inequality sit? What does the cost of living crisis really mean for businesses? That's when you start working together that the relationships genuinely develop. You need to make sure you've been in the right places and drunk a glass of wine and the networking thing. They're great, you know. There's enough of that in spades if you want to do that from chamber movement. Get involved in the detail of the policy and the environment. Then all of a sudden, that's when friendships come from. So that's an important one, isn't it?
Absolutely agree. I mean, you know, one of the unique features of Coventry and Warwickshire is that our relationships are authentic. And they transcend sort of specific issues, so that my experience is, if I need help with something, I can reach out right across the sub-region, and people will be only too glad to pull together and help. And do you find that there is there a different quality to the relationships in our area, Corrie? Have you seen it different elsewhere?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Well, I went from a public sector background, so I was head of economic development and an investment at Telford and Wolverhampton, running a LEP over in Leicester and Leicester for a few years. I loved coming to the chamber job, because also all the bureaucracy was gone. It struck me sometimes, you'd be sat in a room full of people, make a decision, and about an hour later we were doing it. Whereas, you know, and in a public sector background, you've got to get your T's crossed and your I's dotted and get it all right. But all the partnerships I've ever known were brilliant, and you've built those relationships. There seems to be a real civic marriage in Coventry and Warwickshire that I was really struck by. I felt like I was becoming automatically part of a community, regardless of who I was as an individual, because I had a good job and the things are going on. I was welcomed, and everywhere I go, everyone seemed to know each other in a nice way to get the things done. That's great. It's scary every now and again. It gets a bit, you know.
You can't have any secrets.
Yeah, you know, and you look at that, but at the same time, and that's fine, and I love that. I love that camaraderie. But I'm now getting to understand what drives people, which is way more important. So if you're talking from Stuart, from Warwick University, or from Martin, from Coventry Council, or from yourself, once you start talking about some of the big issues, you realise all anyone cares about is making the place a better live for everybody. And that's great.
And I think, you know, if we look back to the 2008 recession, for example, one of the things about the Coventry and Warwickshire economy is it is high performing, we all know that, but it's got this ability to bounce back and bounce forward at a faster rate than anywhere else. And a number of high-profile individuals, leaders, have been around Coventry and Warwickshire for some time. There's something about this place that makes people invest in it, and they want to pull together to the betterment of our shared communities. And they want to do more and more together. So people stay here for a long time because it's a great place and because the relationships are so solid. And it's hard to find anywhere else that matches up to that, which is why people stay here. And I just wonder, what's next for us? So we've seen that the LEPs are going as a construct. The relationships will continue. We're all absolutely clear about that. And Coventry and Warwickshire local authorities, you mentioned a civic marriage, and we've made that commitment, those vows to each other, that one Coventry and Warwickshire is where it's at, and that's going to continue post-LEP. What's your ambition for how we marshal together those agencies and bodies that have got an economic stake in our future?
Well, I think, you know, you come to the heart of that. How do you drive good programmes of regeneration, really dynamic, exciting areas of collaboration that really get to the nuts and bolts of what an economy looks like? And you're an economist, so you'll know this. So that although we shouldn't confuse wealth, and there's a lot of wealth in Warwickshire in particular, with income, and actually, and with turnover, because one of the things that rural economies particularly are often bogged down in is we see the trappings of wealth, but when you unpick to an agricultural level, to small farmers, small entrepreneurs, small shop owners, small business owners, actually they are struck by what rural deprivation is often hidden by. It's easy to see deprivation in inner city areas like Coventry because you can walk down the street and you can see it. You can see where crime happens. So I think this partnership is an important one where we all need to know our roles. So when I was at the local enterprise partnership, we used to talk all the time about, oh, we're the voice of business. We weren't really. We were a voice of business as an enterprise partnership. This collaboration we've got here, the Chamber's role in that, is absolutely bringing a business view to the discussions on there. But we need to pick our projects now and make them happen. So, for instance, we know that we've made cars for a long time. We've made bikes and motorbikes. If we don't change our way we make things over the next 7 or 8 years into a new modern net zero focused sustainable economy, we will be the same way that northern areas were when the mines closed, you know, all those times ago in the 80s. We need to move very quickly. So the gigafactory is something that me and Sean have spent a lot of time talking about. If we want that gigafactory, why do we want it? And what's our role in getting that? We know that the land's important. We know planning's important. We know about the development of that land's important. Getting an end user for that land, developing the market for electric cars is important. Getting businesses to diversify the supply chains, getting colleges to get the skills ready, younger people looking at it. All of those components are absolutely that marriage pushed to its limits, aren't they? If we all want that, we're all agree. It doesn't matter where it sits, the business rates, does it? It doesn't matter who get the jobs come from. Let's get operational. We all play a part in that. And as a Chamber of Commerce, we have an absolute essential part in that to support the people who can develop the lands with making sure the businesses are ready when they get there and working with universities and colleges to make sure the humans are there. So for me, the future of the lit area is about a modern, inclusive, net zero focused, digitally focused area that we know our part in and supporting our public partners to make sure it happens.
Hi, I'm Rob Jones and I'm from Coventry College. I'm part of the business development team, kind of focusing mainly on apprenticeships and helping businesses through finding apprentices and recruiting them, right from recruitment into placement. But Coventry College has been a member with the Chamber for many years now, and it's a very good place to network with other businesses. There's always great events that are planned, and it's good to be part of it and putting the name of Coventry College out amongst local businesses and individual businesses as well.
So we're sitting here in the Middle Street studio in Leamington today, which is a really cool building.
Yeah.
And for me, this is a real example of how we do some fantastic stuff, but actually it's quite hidden from the sort of superficial view. And for Warwickshire and Coventry, I mean, we've got quite different demographics, quite different economic features, but you know, on the face of it, people would look at Warwickshire and say it's a wealthy area. But as you said, Corinne, you know, it masks the fact that there are some real areas of rural deprivation. But also, we've got some really up-and-coming, strong economic sectors that are also quite hidden from plain view. So outside of London, we've got the biggest digital and creative economy in the country with something like 30,000 jobs. Now, when I tell people that, they're so amazed. How did I not know that, they say. And I think, is there more, there must be more, that we can do to actually promote our strong sectors and grow them, but actually, you know, raise the wider awareness to people, businesses outside of our patch. Let's stop hiding our treasures. The Chamber will have a key role in that. How do you think we can work together as, you know, sector leaders, business leaders, local authorities, to actually expose our strengths?
Yeah, I think it comes on a couple of levels. I think we're absolutely bloody dreadful at showing the world how good we are at doing things.
We're quite modest, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, and that's a real problem, isn't it? You know, that actually sometimes you need some swagger. You know, sometimes you need to be able to say, look at us, look at it. I'm all struck. I went to Birmingham. I've been to see Left Field play in Birmingham. And it was when Ariana Grande, the bomb went off at the yes. gig there. And I went back about 2 weeks later. I was there the same night. 2 weeks later, I went back. And the whole city was draped in bees, the worker bee, everywhere around about Manchester coming together as an area. And I love that idea that actually, do you know what? This is what our area is, this is our swagger, this is our identity. We have industrial backgrounds, arms around, we're inclusive. I love that. We need to have that same swagger in Coventry and Warwickshire, where we can say, do you know what? We're me and you are never going to tell Codemasters what a good programmer looks like. You know, we can build beautiful buildings, but we can't make them cool inside. Mm. So that marriage needs to be, you create the environment, you know, for growth to happen. You give them the tools for growth to happen, and then you've got to step back. Because clusters like this don't happen from public sector or chambers of commerce poking their nose around in it. They happen because businesses are talking to businesses casually, easily, solving problems together, being creative. So all of us knowing our role in these things is a big one. Knowing when to push and when to step back. And I think if you get that partnership right, then that's when the growth comes.
So we're sort of a dating agency for businesses. And one of the things that is instrumental in that is about the skills that are coming through in our young people.
Yeah.
And I've certainly, you know, working with Warwickshire College Group and Angela Joyce, the principal there, we do a lot around trying to anticipate and respond to the skills asks of new and upcoming business and growth sectors. So trying to amend and adjust the curriculum offer in schools and colleges so that we can push out that pipeline of young people who are skilled and equipped to work in those new and exciting sectors that, you know, we possibly can't anticipate ourselves. And that is a role that, in all seriousness, that dating agency of place shapers to influence the skills offer, the skills capacity for new and emerging technologies, demands from businesses to go forward even stronger.
And I think you're right. I think one of the greatest skills we could learn from the tech industry in particular is that they don't see a local market. What they just see a global market. And what they'll see is they'll see a product that they just assume will be sold globally as soon as it's ready for market. Whereas most of our businesses look at their products as like saying, oh, I'm based in Leamington and I'll sell it there and I'll have a shop here. That's, we would have got this idea about real entrepreneurship starts in the point is this global market. And that's what they do here so brilliantly. If we can begin to have that entrepreneurship we build into every new business, trading globally, as soon as you do it online, you can do that idea. That will change our marketplace around, because we're not just looking at, is it hard to sell goods in Coventry and Warwickshire at the moment? There's a global marketplace, provided we can get them the skills and the access to those markets if they want. And they do that brilliantly here.
And what role can the Chamber of Commerce play in helping those firms access a global market?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing, because I think there's two ways, isn't it? If you've got a product that needs to go into a box and needs to have a certificate next to it and move it across the globe, we do that. We do that every day with our dock service. And there's a lot of our manufacturing businesses who need that support. It's a different matter when you've got a product that can be done virtually, or a professional, or a service that can be sold, or a product that can be downloaded. And I think trying to find those global markets, there's already an industry, a network that's available for people, but people still need the same skills, don't they? to find those new markets and plan that. And that's what we've done for nearly 200 years now, isn't it, the network?
Do you think our global network would help businesses access new markets?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we're finding is that, you know, the you join a chamber of commerce, don't you? And it's unbelievable when you get your head around it. It's like, it's, you know, here you are, the one in Coventry and Warwickshire. There's 53 across the UK, 75, you know, accredited networks across the globe. And actually, if you go to any city in the world, there's a Chamber of Commerce there. And if you knock on the door and say, oh, hello, I run the Chamber of Commerce over in Coventry and Warwickshire in England, they'll sit you down, have a cup of tea with you, and they want to know about what's going on and what you're selling. That face-to-face network's unrivaled anywhere on the planet. You know.
And of course, it's all much more accessible now that we can do stuff online. We can talk to anyone, anywhere, as long as people are prepared to get out of bed for different time differences.
Yeah.
But, you know, and again, you know, our accelerated technological development has really opened up fantastic global opportunities for us. Are you finding from your members that they are up for that and that they're equipped for that? Or is there more help or support that we need to give to businesses?
Yeah, I mean, there's a report out today that looks at post-Brexit trade for the last 2 years that the British Chamber of Commerce have published. It's difficult for businesses at the moment. You know, certainly our trade with Europe's dropped, which is a real shame. Our manufacturers, supply chains are really, really difficult. But we are so incredibly innovative as a supply chain network. We always solve problems. And whatever else happens, our economy will grow again. But, you know, we look at things that are really interesting around these areas. If you looked at something that us, local authorities, chambers of commerce and providers, say, have got in common, it's this idea of entrepreneurship. I love entrepreneurship. And we're sat in a very cool place looking at this all around us. Is that we know during recessions is the numbers of entrepreneurs goes up. The business startups increase every time because people lose their job, they need to have extra money, they've had an idea that they think for a while can go on about it. Absolutely right. So really, people aren't downtrodden. What people are coming out with is energy and ideas. And actually, the startup levels will shoot through the roof next year across Coventry and Warwickshire. And what we'll find is our failure rates will shoot through the roof in about 3 or 5 years' time when actually they've done well, they had to employ staff, and we haven't quite supported them. If there's one thing that we could do together brilliantly over the next 2 or 3 years is how do we pick up those entrepreneurs and support them and guide them and help them for the next 3 years so they don't close down.
Are there any entrepreneur clubs? And a club isn't a sort of an old term, but you know, if I were an entrepreneur as an individual, I'd want to know how others are managing.
Yeah.
What sort of challenges are other entrepreneurs facing? What about resilience? What about support? You know, to give people the best chance of making their business fly, how do they come together, or do they, or are they individuals?
The two biggest impacts of these things are really good clubs and networks to get together with like-minded business people to one, and a good mentor.
Yeah.
Is, you know, we've got like 4 or 5 really key people in our business who all run businesses. They've all had bankruptcies, they've all gone up, they've all had successes. But actually, I was struck by the skills in our team. They are the ones who will sit with the business and say, don't panic, this happens, don't worry about it, you've got a good product here, let's look about it. They're unofficial chair of the board almost, aren't they? Brilliant mentors and cool networks that don't feel like they're engineered, they feel like they're natural. That's what we need to do, and build some cool space for them to base their businesses at the same time.
I really like what you said there about don't panic. And, you know, if the last few years have taught us all something, it's don't panic, keep calm. You know, just take a breath and talk to colleagues, talk to friends about how we're going to deal with whatever challenge we're facing. And, you know, we're all in this same position where, you know, now going into 2023, at tipping point for recession. Forecasts are that inflation will start to come down quite quickly in the next year. How can we impart that experience of keeping calm when everything is going pear-shaped? Because as leaders, you know, that's what you have to do. You have to keep calm, keep a cool head, and be able to think your way through a problem that is facing you. How can we support entrepreneurs in developing those softer skills around managing their resilience and their sustainability and keeping calm in the face of crisis?
And I think this whatever business support means and whatever business support looks like, that feeling of community is an important one, isn't it? You're absolutely right. Because a good mentor will strip it all away, won't they? They'll say, let's be, have you got a good product or service here? That's our starting point,
strip
isn't it?
Down.
Is it? Are you still confident it's a good one? And are you still confident there's a market out there to buy that service or product? And once you get back to that, then you can calm down a little bit. This is a tough time. The product's right, the market's out there. Let's just think of different ways or rolling back or just getting ready for when it opens up again. At the certain times when markets contract, good businesses reorganize themselves, strip away the things that weren't doing very well, get things right, get ready. They still have confidence in their product or service. And that's what we can do. Take a step back from this. You had a good business before it, you'll have a good business at the end of it. Let's just make that during that middle time, we get things in shape that you've not having that time to do for ages. And that calming voice is great.
And what about you, Corin, as an individual? Mm. How do you keep yourself sane and calm when facing so many challenges? And you know, how have you built up those schemes? You're an energetic person. Mm. You're bubbly. You're, you know, full of ideas. And not to confuse, you know, states around how we are. How do you keep calm? And what's helped you to develop that ability?
I'm not sure I'm ever calm. unfortunately for everyone around me, but I think my if anything, it's keeping enthusiastic. I think the other way around. I'm always interested in what people are doing. And every single business I go into, I'm within about 10 minutes, I'm working for them in my mind, or I'm running it and everything else around it. And I look at their shop floor, their factory, and I get so excited by it that I spend the next 2 days thinking, oh, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do that, texting people and understanding it. That enthusiasm, that can never go, can it? If that flame ever goes out, it's time to jack it in, I think, and take up fishing or something. But at the moment, my energy level's never dropped.
Hi, I'm Adam Dent from Advent Communications. We're part of the PLMR Group, which is a top 100 media and communications firm. Our office in the Midlands is based in Coventry. We also have one in Birmingham. We handle all sorts of PR, communications, social media, new media, website design, podcasts, videos. We've worked for the Chamber for 2 decades now, making sure that it's the premier voice in business across Coventry and Warwickshire. We're also members and get absolute full value from our membership. We've met a lot of clients through there, a lot of networking, a lot of influencing. Really, we find it's the number one organisation to be a member of, and we're proud to work for so many of their members.
This is the part of the podcast where we do some quick fire questions to get to know Corin really well. So Corin, we have a message for, well, a question for you from one of our members, Lee Corden, the director of PLMR Advent. He wants to know, what was your perception of Coventry and Warwickshire before you came across and started working here? And how has that changed in the 6 months or so you've been here?
I came to Coventry when I was younger, predominantly to see bands. So for, you know, most of the late 80s, early 90s, I came to see bands. And it was a place that I loved to watch bands in, but I didn't feel necessarily safe when I was doing it. I grew up in Shropshire, so Warwickshire, I recognise the beauty and the greatness that goes around areas like that, of just the pleasure of being here. What struck me when I came back, and you can't prepare yourself for this actually, is as a city, Coventry is an exemplar of getting the generation right at the moment. I think the City of Culture's done wonders for it. And I love that feeling that this is a city going in the right direction. I worked at Wolverhampton for an awful long time, and actually Wolverhampton, we were desperate to get that momentum, that spreadsheet bit where investors see more money coming out of their investment than when they put it into it. I think we're here. And the other bit I love is just, as an area I've never explored much is in Warwickshire, I am no ever stop to be gobsmacked at the riches of this county. It's unbelievable. We were at our Christmas meal the other week, we've done all sorts of places. Sometimes you get out of your car in the morning and, you know, and then there's a flock of birds flying overhead and mist over a distant hill, and you have that sort of early morning melancholy of industry and rurality at the same time. Yeah, this is a place blessed with more things than most places could want.
Tell me about your name, Corin. Corin Crane, what a fantastic name. Like, it could be an author, it could be a film star. I'd love to have a powerful name like that. Where did it come from?
Yeah, there's a story there. I mean, there's two roots. There's an actor called Corin Redgrave that my nan used to really, really fancy. So I think it could purely just be my nan's libido that got me my name. And alternatively, there's one of my mum's favourite books when she's young with the Books of Narnia, and in the Horse News Boy, there's a Prince Corin. So there's two routes. If I'm feeling like a Lothario, it's the Corin Redgrave. If I'm feeling literary, it's the Prince and his boy. So
you've got ability to reinvent yourself.
Yeah, Prince Corin was called Thunderfist. He fought his way across the plains of Narnia, and sometimes I feel like Thunderfist.
So Thunderfist, is that your superhero alter ego? What superpowers have you got?
I probably to make people feel at ease. I think that's it. I don't come with an ego. I haven't got any ego. You know, I'm genuinely an honest and egalitarian bloke. I think that really believes in people. I think if I had a superpower, it's never to believe hype. It's just always to have your feet in the ground, and I will never ever change that one.
So you sound like you know yourself quite well. what skill, is there a particular skill that you're craving to develop, or something to master?
Oh God, that's a good one, isn't it? Well, from an emotional perspective, and I've honed this skill over the years, I think I'm better at focusing now than I used to be, but I could be a lot better. My worry is I flit too much. I get to see stuff. I'm like a butterfly in my mind all the time. But I'm much better at focusing and finishing things than I've ever been in my life. From another skill, I wish I could have had enough concentration to play the guitar. I really do. And I've just got no concentration span on time to. Probably would be diagnosed with ADHD. Because nowadays, wouldn't you? But yeah, I've never had much time to focus on issues. But my focus skills are getting much better. And I'm really good. I'm really good at not saying things now rather than always saying things.
How comfortable are you with silence?
Yeah, all right, better, yeah. Yeah, I'm all right with that. I'm okay with that. I let people speak if I can. So that's a good one. So I don't feel the need to make noise.
I've noticed that you talk very fast. Mm. You're very enthusiastic. But actually, you do listen to what people are saying. Mm. And it's not often that you get listening skills and talking skills, communication skills, in equal balance.
Yeah, well, there we go. That's my superpower. Now I take it back now. I've changed it. But no, you're right.
So one of the features of this podcast has been about music. What was the first concert you ever went to? And what's been the best concert you've ever been to?
I don't know. Growing up in Shrewsbury, not many bands played in Shrewsbury. So I was actually quite... If you lived in the city, you'd sneak into them when you were younger, wouldn't you? But, you know, when my first time, I would have been about 16, 17. So by the time I sort of started seeing, like, The Wedding Present and, you know, and Happy Mondays and Beautiful South and those types of bands were early bands. The Wonder stuff, I absolutely loved. I saw them early doors. They were the ones. I've seen so many brilliant tiny gigs, and you know, I've been to Glastonbury many, many, many times. My favourite ever gig was a band called Spiritualized, still to my day, one of my favourite bands. They played at the Royal Albert Hall. It was a gift. So it'd have been about 1997. You get it on vinyl, actually, the recording of it. But that was just unbelievable moment of the beauty of this, again, chaotic noise and loud clothes. But on the stage, this band I loved, in this environment I'd never been in before, with a gospel choir, string and brass next to it, playing music, which this day, back to our time travel thing, I think music has the power of time travel. I could hear that on vinyl, open my eyes, and I could be in that venue 30 years ago. Oh, amazing.
Who's been the greatest mentor in your journey?
Yeah, I don't know if I've really got a physical mentor, although I would say that Billy Bragg and Paul Heaton are two musicians that I absolutely have used as examples of good human beings who've made money and who've kept their eye on the goal of equality at the end of it all. And also the rebellious nature of Alan Sillitoe as an author. If you've never read The Loneliest, The Long Distance Runner, you must read it. Brilliant novella. And Seamus Heaney as a poet and a human being as well. Yeah. I think more about those characters of what it means to be an interesting and honest person rather than business mentors, I think.
You spend a lot of your time giving advice and support to other people. Yeah. What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
I'm not sure if it's one individual bit of advice, but one of the best skills I ever learned was when I actually worked in the public sector, is that I'm completely open and transparent with every single decision I make. So at work, all the things I put into place and in a new place, right? Me stepping back from decisions weirdly and letting other people make them, so there's transparency around it. I would have the tendency of to skip process because of the way I am. And I would just, I can't vary it. I can't think if things slow down. I step around it and move on and just do it anyway. But my time in the public sector stops me from doing that to this day. It actually makes me follow a process. And once you've got a process in place, the principle, the right thing to do, everything makes sense. So I think that was my best skill now, is have my energy levels, but I always come back to a process.
And what, that's good. What's, on the other side of it, what's the toughest lesson you've ever learned?
I had never realised that I'm a white working class boy who left school without hardly any qualifications, grew up with a single mum. I was on free school dinners, you know, all of those things. And when you look at that as an environment to escape from, to do well in life, when you look at the data and our sort of jobs, you realise what a mad task that is. But in no stage of my life did I ever think it was a problem. It wasn't until I got a job at Lesser Enterprise Partnership that I started meeting real wealth and people who had been given opportunities. And then you realise, actually, I'd beaten challenges without even realising they were challenges in the first place. But there, for the grace of God, are so many other brilliantly, other intelligent people with opportunities who just don't get that done. And that's the crime of this country, is that the talent that sits within our workers and our communities is never really achieved. And for most people, never get the opportunity to do the jobs that they're capable of doing. That's a crime.
Corin, you've clearly broken down many barriers and had a very successful career. Mm. If you could go back and talk to your younger self, what one piece of advice would you give him?
Pick the plectrum up. Don't swap drama for politics. Just be yourself. You know, I've never once stopped, and I've annoyed so many people over the years, but personality is so important, isn't it? Being an individual, you know, not just having a nameless individual, I guess, but being an individual that people remember, because actually they, you know, that's the thing. Being honest in yourself is I know it's that sounding trite, it's just true. Never curb your personality. Don't try and fit in. You know, never be that person who tries to fit in. Sod it. You
love
know,
it.
Just be yourself.
Love it, Corin.
Yeah.
Well, it comes to the end of the podcast. Corin, I want to thank you very much for being our very first guest of 2023.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed the surroundings we've been in. And Monica, what a fantastic co-host you've been. I very much look forward to getting to interview you later on in this year. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you, mate. Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Monica.